Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the World View. That's right, it is the Weekly World View. I am your host, Doug McBurney, here with my extremely attractive audio engineer on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So good to have you with us. I have a couple of thank yous I have to get out right off the bat. Was at the big one this past weekend. Yeah, one of the big ones. That was the wedding of Joshua and Caroline Craddock down in Payton, Colorado. A beautiful service it was, and one of the most overtly traditional Christian wedding ceremonies I've ever attended. So if you weren't there, please, you can live vicariously through me for just a moment. Pastor Bob Enyart gave the entire history of traditional marriage, biblical marriage. Well, we just call it marriage during the ceremony. It was phenomenal, and I must say that whenever Pastor Enyart runs a wedding, it's always overtly Christian. But this one was particularly Christian and particularly heavy on the emphasis of the biblical history of traditional marriage. And it was just a beautiful view, a beautiful location. And while the entire rest of the state was being swamped and flooded, the skies held their peace, and Joshua and Caroline were united. And it was a tremendous blessing. So I want to thank, Joshua and Caroline and Pastor Bob and James and Amy. Thanks to everyone for inviting us. A good time, a great time was had by all. And blessings upon the young couple as they go forward. So thank you to them. And then also I want to thank Pastor David Love down at Calvary Chapel in Castle Rock, where the family and I and Leslie Hanks, president of American Right to Life. Or is she the spokesperson? Anyway, we were all down there gathering signatures this morning, and it was just incredible. Gathering signatures for the personhood campaign here in Colorado. I want to thank Pastor Love for, just opening up his congregation to us and to the idea that all innocent people should be protected by love and by law. And so there, my thank yous are out of the way. Thank you, Pastor Love. And I want to encourage Pastor Love to be out there spreading the word, because we need all the help we can get, especially in the church. Believe it or not, as depressing as that is, it's the church that needs to be awakened, most of all, to the personhood message. So, thanks to everyone involved. And now, do we want to move on to the news? The news is actually kind of depressing compared to all that. But what are you going to do? It's the news of the day. And that's what we do here. We focus on the news of the week through the lens of original thought. That's biblical thought. And so I find it odd that we start with a story about Simon Cowell, because he's the opposite of everything biblical, everything traditional, everything good, and everything righteous. Who's that? Simon Cowell, who's that? I like you more and more every day. My extremely attractive audio engineer doesn't know who Simon Cowell is. He is the British fellow who invented, American Idol, The X Factor, and Britain's Got Talent. He's a 53-year-old, extremely abrasive, vain, and just all around, just a rotten fellow. He's 53 years old, and in the news has broken this past week that he is expecting a baby with Lauren Silverman. Now, who's that? Yeah, nobody knows who that is. But as you can imagine, they are not married, okay? Now, reports indicate that she is about 10 weeks pregnant. And not only are they not married, Silverman is married to Cowell's close friend, Andrew Silverman. Yeah, that's it. Like his best friend's wife and him are expecting a baby. News report here from Us Magazine says that she plans to leave her husband to be with the father of her child. To be with. So juxtapose that to the beautiful traditional Christian wedding ceremony of young Joshua Craddock and Caroline And it's just, it's not two sides of the same coin. It's two opposite sides of parallel universes. Yeah. So this is where the heathens are. I mean, Simon Cowell comes out, he's having a baby, and the media just gushes over him and, you know, is this going to make you a nice guy? And are you going to start being a decent human being now? And instead of being appalled and shocked that this abrasive moron has impregnated his best friend's wife, for crying out loud. It's disgusting. But that's the news. Simon says he thinks it's going to make him a better person. Simon says, no, Simon said, don't copy whatever Simon does out there, please. I don't want to do any more on that story. I just wanted to open with something to bring us back to reality from the glorious weekend we've had here at the McBurney compound and all around. And so now to bring us back down to earth, even further beneath the earth, we go to the war file from CBS News. Bradley Manning, the Army private who gave thousands of classified U.S. military and diplomatic documents to WikiLeaks, was acquitted this past week of the most serious charge of aiding the enemy. Yes. What enemy? Yeah, I know. That's what I said. Is there an enemy? Is there a war? There's no enemy. How could they possibly convict Bradley Manning of helping the enemy, or what is it, aiding the enemy, when the official line of the Obama administration is there is no enemy? We're not at war with anyone. We love everyone. And we wish they would just love us back. We love Bradley Manning. We love everyone. We love Al-Qaeda. We love Huma Abedin. We love all of them. Anyway, since there is no enemy, Bradley Manning was acquitted of the most serious charge. He still does face prison time. I'm sure he's looking forward to that because he's a queer. I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but the young lad is quite confused at this point in his career, and he's on his way to prison, where I'm sure he'll just have a dandy old time. He was acquitted of the charge of aiding the enemy by an Army judge, Colonel Denise. Yeah, Colonel Denise, Army judge. She acquitted Bradley Manning. He's a traitor. He should have been taken out back behind the judge's quarters and summarily executed. But instead, he will go on, no doubt, to fame and fortune and probably a reality television show, maybe even from inside the walls of the prison, where he will be, he'll be sent there for quite some time, apparently. He faces up to 20 years on the other offenses of stealing secrets and leaking them to fellow deviant pervert Julian Assange over at WikiLeaks. So there's one traitor not getting what he deserves. And let's move on to another one. Edward Snowden, according to Russia Times, Russia Today, I believe it is, RT.com, I believe it's Russia Today. It's their version of NBC's Today Show, but it runs 24/7 on television. Edward Snowden, according to RT, has been granted temporary asylum in Russia. He's free to stay in Russia until 2014. And according to RT, he can now only be transported to the United States if he agrees to go voluntarily. Yeah, which he's probably not going to do. Although I don't know why. He would probably receive a state dinner at the White House. I heard another radio host who had called him a hero and a patriot and then a hero again. And then I think wanted to make a statue to him. I think it was Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck this week, after Snowden received asylum in Russia, Glenn Beck said, well, maybe he's not a patriot. But what he did was a patriotic act, said Glenn Beck. And I believe work on the statue has been temporarily halted there at the Beck headquarters. According to RT, Snowden's present location has not been made public, but reports are that he's still likely with that blonde Russian girl who was seen seated next to him in all those grainy videos we saw. Had anybody noticed that? A very attractive blonde Russian lady sitting right next to Ed there the whole time. I can guarantee you she's been involved in the debriefing of young Mr. Snowden, and he'll no doubt be hanging out with her for at least the next year. She works directly for Vlad, I do believe. Now, speaking of national security, by the way, Edward Snowden should be summarily executed or drone struck, if at all possible, at the earliest possible convenience of whoever's flying the drones. He should be taken out. Him and his laptop and all of his thumb drives should be vaporized right on the streets of a Russian city. Well, that wouldn't be good for international relations with Russia. But at least Mr. Snowden would get what he deserves, which is death. Yeah, for leaking all those secrets. Yeah. Okay, so there we go. There's McBurney's view of international relations. Yeah, the McBurney Doctrine. If you are a traitor, you're a traitor. If you harbor a traitor, you are a traitor. If you are a traitor, you are a traitor. All right, now I've got a quote here. More from the politics file on international relations and national security. Human rights attorney Brooke Goldstein. That's Brooke Goldstein, I said. She's a human rights attorney. She says Huma Abedin, who is Hillary Clinton's chief of staff, she says Huma Abedin is one of the greatest national security threats in the nation. Yeah. She says because of her position with Hillary Clinton and her ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, she is one of the greatest national security threats in the nation. Brooke Goldstein reports that Huma, in addition to being married to Anthony Viner, her family members are part and parcel of the Muslim Brotherhood. Can you imagine how embarrassed the Brotherhood must be over the past few months to have gotten Huma into such a strategic position, and then they find out she's married to a serial pervert? And they've just got to be thinking, how did this happen? Didn't somebody vet this guy? We've got Huma right next to one of the most powerful women in the government, possibly the next president of the United States, and this guy has to whip out his smartphone and ruin everything. Anyway, heads are rolling at the Muslim Brotherhood, because when you make a mistake with them, there are consequences. So someone's had to pay the price for allowing Anthony Viner to be in on the whole situation. Let's see. More on Huma. Human rights attorney Brooke Goldstein says she poses one of the greatest national security threats of this administration. She has access to the most classified information because of her position with Ms. Clinton about the Muslim Brotherhood, whose creed, by the way, is to destroy America from within. Yeah. She says the only reason that Viner, this disgraced man, is still able to run for the mayor of New York is his connections to Huma Abedin. Yeah, well, you know, it's one of the old theories of you got to dance with who brung you in. The Muslim Brotherhood, they threw in with Huma and Anthony, and they pretty much got to ride that horse all the way, even if it ends up at the bottom of the creek. They're stuck with Anthony, and Huma's stuck with him as well. Just an embarrassing situation. Another example of public figures who have absolutely no shame. I mean, not only Anthony, forget about him. He's obviously deranged and mentally unbalanced. But Huma Abedin is a very smart spy. But she just hitched her star to the wrong wagon. And so she's going to go down with the ship. If the ship goes down, who knows? Anthony Viner could be the next mayor of New York. Stranger things are certainly happening all the time. You notice I didn't say stranger things have happened, because nothing stranger than that has ever happened, I don't believe, if he does win. That'll be the strangest thing to date. But strange things are happening all the time and all around us. All right. Now, let's move on to the politics file from the annals of the impotence of the Republican Party. We go to Representative Daryl Issa in a report from CNN. Daryl Issa, he is the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, and he's warning acting IRS chief Daniel Werfel. He says, quote, "If the IRS continues to hinder this committee's investigation in any manner, the committee will be forced to consider the use of compulsory process." Now, Issa did not elaborate on exactly what steps his panel and the Republican majority may be prepared to take, but he did warn the Democrats and the IRS chief that if you continue this, I'll tell you what, compulsory, I'll At which point, the entire Democratic caucus burst into laughter and pointed their fingers at Representative Issa and said, "Can you even believe this guy?" And they laughed at him. But Issa kept a straight face, and he said obstructing a congressional investigation is a crime, at which point the laughter got even louder and the Democrats began to tear up. Some of them curled over, grabbing their sides, and fell on the floor in uproarious laughter. Now, according to reports, the IRS has no intention of complying completely or promptly with the committee's oversight efforts. Oh no, that's Darrell Issa again, he said. With a straight face, he says, "You have no intention of complying." And the Democrats continued laughing. Issa said, he went on, "The systematic manner in which the IRS has attempted to delay, frustrate, impede, and obstruct the committee's investigation raises serious concern." And he looked up, and the Democrats were laughing so hard that some of them had actually ripped their sides open and blood was squirting out of their torsos. They had laughed so hard at Mr. Issa. It was quite the scene, man. Now, Issa claimed that the IRS has handed over only 12,000 of the more than 64 million documents that have been requested by Issa and his committee, at which point the Democrats said, 64 million documents? You've got to be out of your mind, Mr. Issa. And they just continue to laugh at it. It's so sad to see what's happened to the Republican Party. Their complete impotence in going after the scandals of the Democrats. But that's what happens when the conservative party decides to allow itself to be led by a bunch of liberals. How did you know Darrell Issa was from California? That's pretty sharp. My extremely attractive audio engineer is on top of all the back channel stories. Darrell, he's looking California, but he's feeling Minnesota. Okay, no insult meant for any of our listeners out in Minnesota. But Darrell, it's just embarrassing, and it's sad, but that's where the Republicans are, possibly only to be salvaged. I mean, what they've done to the country may only be repaired by industrious Americans, by free men who still retain a little bit of the freedom that our forefathers died for. And we, that's me and you and all of us free people, normal people, we may be able to help salvage what the Republicans have managed to ruin and squander over the past generation or two or six. So, in fact, let's go to the politics file from Financial Times. Prince Al-Walid bin Talal, he's the billionaire Saudi Arabian investor, and he's like the black sheep nephew of the king there in Saudi Arabia. He sent an open letter addressed to the Saudi oil minister, in which the prince said, "Our country is facing continuous threat because of its almost total dependency on oil." And it's true. Saudi Arabia, according to this report from Financial Times, which I consider a fairly reliable source when it comes to Financial Times and information, oil revenues account for 92% of the Saudi state budget, Yeah. And almost 90% of the country's export revenues. Yeah, it seems the only thing the Saudis export besides oil is Wahhabism. And Wahhab, what are they called there that the Muslims go to for church? What do they call their churches? Mosques. Thank you very much. See, I have to rely on my extremely attractive audio engineer. Mosques is what they call them. The only other thing, he went back to the beginning of the joke, the only other thing the Saudis seems to export are Wahhab mosques. And the crowd went crazy and laughed. All right, so there you have it. The other 90%, it's all related to oil. Now, Financial Times reports that U.S. imports from OPEC members, oil imports, have fallen to a 15-year low as of last year, and Black Sheep nephew Prince Al-Walid bin Talal says in his letter, "We see that raising North American shale gas production is an inevitable threat to the kingdom and to OPEC." Well, that's encouraging. You got a bunch of hayseeds in North Dakota that are shaking the foundations of the most powerful oil monarchy on the planet, and I think it's a beautiful thing to see. Now, I guess Al-Walid isn't actually part of the government. He is a billionaire, so that gives him some influence. But he's apparently, he doesn't exactly have the ear of the king, and that's why he's had to send this open letter to try to get his point across that shale oil here in the United States, well, it could be a serious threat to the world order of OPEC and all of their oil exports. So if everyone, and when I say hayseeds in North Dakota, I mean that not in a derogatory sense, because I'm a big fan of hayseeds myself. I grew up relatively hayseedian, as a matter of fact. So I can speak that language, and I get along with you folks. And I grew up in the oil fields, too. And so I know what that's all about. And I appreciate all the free men out there, the independent oil producers, the small producers, the wildcat drillers, who are out there striving to be free despite the fact that every effort is being made to quash their entrepreneurial spirit. And I'm just thankful that there are still a few free people left in some of the interior portions of the United States that have not yet been corrupted by the vile and foul policy remedies found on the East and West coasts that are destroying the coasts, as a matter of fact. So thank heaven for North Dakota and thank heaven for shale oil. And I'm glad that he's got Al-Walid a little bit worried. I'm glad that we have Al-Walid just a little bit worried about the future of their economic Ponzi scheme they've got running over there in Saudi Arabia. That thing could fall apart any minute. All right, speaking of things that could fall apart at any minute, what about the massive bloated welfare state here in America? Talk about embarrassing. I've got a story here from the Washington Examiner. They report that many recipients of federal disability checks admit that they are capable of working. Now, how shocking is that? You mean people on the dole could actually work and feed themselves? Shocking. How could that ever happen? I thought there were checks and balances. I thought that there were they screened these people. You know, oh no, they're giving away free money and people are actually lying to get it? That's just shocking. I can't believe it. Anyway, they admit that they're capable of working, but they cannot or will not find a job. Yeah, and the Washington Examiner, the reporter says, and that they say that working to get off the disability rolls is not among their goals. But more baffling, most have never received significant medical treatment, nor even seen a doctor about their condition in the past year.
Have we?
What's that?
Have we seen a doctor?
Have we seen a doctor in the past year? I saw a doctor once.
For what? Significant?
Well, no, it wasn't significant. No, no, it wasn't. You know what I find baffling is that the reporter finds it baffling that most of these people have never seen the doctor in the past year. How does he think that's baffling? He just reported that many of them are lying outright through their teeth to get benefit checks, yet he finds it baffling that they haven't seen a doctor or had medical treatment in the past year. It's baffling to him. So, folks, were you aware, I was not aware of this, that there's two types of disability welfare. There is what they call unearned disability. That's called SSI. I don't know what that stands for. They just say SSI. Sounds like something out of the Soviet Union. Unearned disability. Come sign up for your SSI. Fill out your papers. That's unearned disability. That's for individuals who have petitioned the government to be classified as disabled. Well, if you're able to petition the government, are you really disabled? I mean, how disabled are you? I mean, if you can fill out a form, you could probably work for a living. But they have petitioned the government, and they come down to the welfare office in their sweatpants, and they sit down and say, I give up. Just please label me as disabled. Help me out here. And, of course, there's a government bureaucrat just ready to hand out those checks. So that's SSI. And then there's another one. They call that earned disability. That's SSDI. So SSI people, they just flop down on the chair in their sweats and said, I give up. They never have worked, and they've never paid into Social Security. Recipients of SSDI, that's disability, Social Security Disability Insurance, they have held jobs for significant periods of time, and they have paid at least partially into Social Security before becoming disabled and going on the dole. And I have no doubt that some of them are genuinely disabled. No doubt that there are some. Even some of the SSI people who came down in their sweats and just gave up. Just let me fill out the form. I'm a loser. Well, I'm sure some of them people are genuinely disabled as well. I just don't think it's the government's place to take care of them. I don't think it's the government's place to give my money to disabled people that I don't know. Because I know people, I happen to know people who are disabled. And if the government would allow me to keep more of my money, I could probably help them myself. Yeah. I mean, we all have aging parents and uncles and aunts and family members who are old and disabled or sick. And we would love to help them. But the government's taking about half of our stuff and giving it to these people without our consent. And so I just don't think it's their place to be doing it. And I'm not surprised that there are an awful lot of people who are working the system. It's just, I do not find that baffling at all. Now, do you want some information about these people? Because I don't want to make light of the fact that the government has constructed a system in which people can basically just give up and accept some sustenance level of financial aid from the government so that they can live at or below the poverty line for the rest of their lives. I hate the fact that the government has set that system up. So I was going to give some of this data about these people who are on SSI and SSDI by way of kind of making fun of them. But I'm not going to do that because I think it's the government that should be made fun of. And in fact, I think a lot of them should be arrested for what they've done, which is the theft of wealth from productive people and the giving of it to others to whom it does not belong. I'm quoting Thomas Sowell, I think. Who's the guy who hosts for Limbaugh, the other black guy, The Economist? Walter Williams, that's him. Taking my money and giving it to others to whom it does not belong, he says, and I agree 100%. All right. So among the most notable results of this survey from which this report is derived, returning to work is not a goal for 71% of SSDI recipients and 60% of SSI recipients. Whose fault is that? Well, it's primarily the government's fault. For putting the trough out and filling it with slop. That it's mostly the government's fault. Another interesting statistic. A vast majority of recipients don't see themselves returning to work within the next 5 years. Whose fault is that? It's the government's fault. Another interesting statistic. Many recipients who started a job while on disability took cash under the table. Yeah. So they're getting their disability check, but they actually can work, so they're working under the table. Whose fault is that? It's the government's fault. Yeah, it's the government's fault. I mean, sure, I suppose we can hold these people accountable to a certain degree because they're the ones filling out the forms and taking the money. But it's the government in their insatiable quest to build a base of dependent voters who is primarily at fault for this, well, this sad state of affairs amongst the disabled in America. You know, there was a time before the 20th century when there just was no welfare. There just wasn't any. So disabled people were taken care of by their families, and families taking care of disabled and dependent family members, well, that makes for stronger families, and it makes for better people. But now we've got the government just dealing out the slop in the giant welfare trough, and as a result of it, we're all becoming lesser men. Boys, put those guitars away. We got to get back to the news. Who was that fat, disgusting congressman? They took pictures of him. He looked like a beached whale down there. I think it was Saint-Tropez. Charlie Rangel, one of the orchestrators and the person, one of the people who himself constructed the government welfare trough. Charlie Rangel, on his own permanent vacation down there, laying on the beach. Unbelievable. All right. Let's get back to the news here. From the squandered celebrity file, we go to Tokyo from the Associated Press. Angelina Jolie has taken a brave stand, ladies and gentlemen. Now, let me just preface this by saying, for anyone who is as famous as Angelina Jolie and who is reliant upon the goodwill of the public to continue her career, I just want to honor her for taking such a brave stand. She's such a good person. She has publicly declared that she is against rape. What? I know, it's brave. I mean, she has got a lot of guts. Yeah, now she says that her first film as a writer and director, she hopes it will inspire viewers to think about rape and war. Well, that's kind of disturbing that she would say that. But apparently this movie she made is about war and rape being used as a weapon, and she wants to highlight that, and she would like that to stop. By the way, let me remind you, Angelina Jolie serves as special envoy for the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, and she happened to be speaking at a screening of her movie at the UN University in Tokyo. Did you know they had an UN University in Tokyo? Well, they've got one, and Angelina was there. And she's against rape. Very brave statement to be made in public, especially by a woman of her stature. Apparently, the Group of Eight is, I guess, eight of the most advanced economies. I think it's the United States, England, France, Canada, Australia, Germany, Austria. Japan. Oh, yeah, Germany, Japan, and then they let the Russians in just because they're scared of the Russians. Yeah, they allow the Russians into all these G8, G14, G27. They let the Russians in, even though the Russian economy is kind of a joke. But they let them in, like, you know, you let that uncle who might get violent, you know, you let him in on the family meeting just because he's kind of crazy, and if you left him out, that, you know, there could be problems. But anyway, I digress on the Group of Eight. The Group of Eight apparently has agreed to work to end rape and sexual violence in war, and the UN Security Council has adopted text urging sanctions against the perpetrators of such violence during armed conflict. Yeah, okay, well, you know what? I suppose Angelina Jolie could be doing worse things. But the point I want to make is that she could be doing a lot more better things as well. So she stands up. She says she's against rape. And we're all supposed to think, wow, Angelina Jolie, what a great person. She's against rape. I'm so impressed. All right. Anyway, her movie is called... I'm not even going to say what her movie's called. I could care less. All right. So now, from Angelina Jolie, wasn't she married to some guy and she had a vial of his blood around her neck? That was weird. Yeah. That's like wearing, I don't know. Well, it's like wearing a vial of somebody's blood around your neck. There's nothing you can compare that to. That's just weird. So I think she's a little strange, but we're all glad to hear that she's against rape. I'm very impressed. Okay. Now, from WorldNet Daily, the American Family Association is urging support for a constitutional amendment that would define marriage as one man and one woman. Apparently, they're worried about polygamy now. Well, yes. I mean, now that homosexual marriage has broken down the wall of separation that existed between the freaks and the normal people, now that that wall of separation has been broken down, well, there's no limit as to how far it could go. And the American Family Association, they think amending the Constitution is probably the thing to do. And I don't know. If I'm Don Wildman and I'm sitting there atop the American Family Association, and I look back upon my life's work, and you look back at the founding of the American Family Association until now, and you'd have to say that the family has been utterly decimated in the time since the American Family Association came onto the scene. And nothing against Mr. Wildman and then the organization. I mean, I appreciate the work they do. But I don't know. Maybe there's got to be a different strategy, because I think we've tried federal legislation declaring marriage between a man and a woman before. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Supreme Court went queer on all of us. And they rendered an opinion that was not the case. And so I'm just not sure what the strategy here is, Mr. Wildman. Maybe you can clue me in. Let's see. This proposal to amend the Constitution against polygamy comes after a legal scholar admitted that the arguments used to justify same-sex marriage will undoubtedly pave the way for legalization of polygamy and incest. Well, no kidding. I mean, I think I've been saying that. In fact, I think I've been saying that just giving homosexuals equal rights basically paves the way for all kinds of perversion to be legalized and even celebrated and promoted and taught in the schools. And there's no bottom to how low we can go now that, you know, the homosexuals have been allowed out of the closet. But Mr. Wildman, he has a quote here regarding events in the recent past. Mr. Wildman says, "We have reached a frightening impasse." And I'm thinking to myself, didn't he say that 20 years ago? Did I not hear him say that 20 years ago? Maybe I'm misremembering. But he says, quote, I fear the day just years from now when marriage has absolutely no definition at all. Well, Mr. Wildman, God bless you, but I think you might have missed the news of the past 6 weeks. Marriage has no definition at all amongst the government and the rabble out there, the masses, all the unwashed heathens who want to do whatever they want. And that's the majority, Mr. Wildman. I hate to break this to you, but in light of all the work you've done, the family has been virtually destroyed, at least respect for the family unit and the ethos of the family, one man, one woman, raising children, that's been utterly destroyed, at least in the minds of the average heathen out there, and definitely in the halls of Congress and in the White House and in courtrooms and city halls across the country. It's gone. It's over, Mr. Wildman. We haven't reached an impasse. We done went over the impasse. I don't know. Mr. Wildman must be, he must be very depressed over the fact that since the AFA came into existence, the destruction of the family has accelerated and well, it's been successful. I mean, if I'm Don Wildman, I would have to give a resignation speech and say, you know what, we lost. I need to hand over the reins to someone else with another strategy. There has to be another strategy. Because whatever we're doing, well, it's not working. Now, Wildman had some very good quotes, I must say. Here's what he said. Wildman said, God gave us the responsibility to protect the sacred union of marriage, and we should resist any effort to destroy it. What God has defined, man must not redefine. Well, I agree with you, Mr. Wildman. I'm just not sure what we can do at this point. I think it's time for pro-family leaders to begin an urgent message to the churches across the country, because only reawakening the church can repair the damage that has been done. You're not going to have any success, Mr. Wildman, with constitutional amendments or in the halls of Congress. It's not going to make any difference. What we need to do is we need to change the hearts and the minds of the people. Well, before the Islamists come over and start changing them for them. Now, there's a resolution in the House of Representatives, Joint Resolution 51, an amendment to the Constitution. It states, quote, marriage in the United States shall consist only of the union of a man and a woman. Neither this Constitution nor the Constitution of any state shall be construed to require that marriage or the legal incidents thereof be conferred upon any union other than the union of a man and a woman, unquote. Well, I mean, that's all nice window dressing, gentlemen, up there at the House with your joint resolution. But when a nation reaches the point of this, where we have to actually write this down, that we're gonna have to codify in law that it has to be a man and a woman. When a nation reaches this point, I think it's time to divide. The normal people should ask the freaks to please go over there so we can reconstruct the wall of separation that kept you off of us and our kids. I think it's time for America, Americans, free normal Americans, to declare our independence from the freaks and the weirdos who are hell-bent on destroying our families and our children. I think the union is no longer functional. I think it's time to divide. The normal people must escape from the hell that is being plotted for us and our children by the perverts and the deviants and the homosexuals and the baby killers and the socialists. Yeah. But usually it's the normal people who have to flee in those kinds of cases. You know, it's always the oppressor who takes the land and forces the oppressed off into banishment. So I don't know. Is there anywhere else that we can go? There's no, maybe North Dakota. I'd hate to have to move to North Dakota. And I'm sorry, folks. I had high hopes for Texas, but forget about it. I don't know. There's nowhere else for us to go, but I'm telling you that we must come out of this somehow. This strategy, now that the American Family Association and all the pro-life, pro-family industry, now that they've lost every single battle they've fought for the past 40 or 60 years, I mean, the time has come now for a new strategy, and I don't think it involves trying to work peacefully politically with these people who want to kill us and our kids. I'm sorry. It's far too late, Mr. Wildman. It's later than you think. I think it's later than all of us think. And it's time for us to separate ourselves from the deviants and the perverts. Now, speaking of deviants and perverts, let's go to the military file. The bad religion file. Jason Heap wants to be a Navy chaplain. He does not believe in God. He says he wants to be a humanist chaplain. He's even submitted his application to the Armed Forces Chaplain Board in an effort to become the first humanist chaplain in military history. This is from Stars and Stripes. Yeah, he's going to be the first humanist. He's been teaching. Now listen to this. The guy says he does not believe in God. He is not a Christian. He says he's a humanist, but He's been teaching religious studies to teenagers in Britain for the past 5 years. Oh, yeah, that's right. He's a hero. I forgot. He's in the military. Must be a hero. Now, he holds a master's degree from a divinity school at Texas Christian University and Oxford. And he's a humanist who doesn't believe in God. Now, can they just cancel that degree? I guess a degree just means that you've ingested all the information. It doesn't mean you actually know anything. It just means that you have the data stuffed into your black little heart somewhere. So he's been teaching religious studies. Last week, American lawmakers approved an amendment to the annual defense authorization bill that's designed to block the Pentagon from accepting chaplains who don't believe in God. So again, ladies and gentlemen, when a nation reaches the point where you have to put into law and write it down that we can't have atheist heathens as chaplains, I mean, you've definitely crossed, into something. I don't know. Something scary and dark that you have to, there are certain things that should go unsaid. Like to be a chaplain, you should believe in God. I'm not saying you have to agree with my theology on every point. I'm just saying you should at least believe in God. And if we have to write it down otherwise, well, I mean, we may have just gone round the bend, ladies and gentlemen. Now, this chaplain, Jason Heap, he says, I'm not doing this just to make a point. I'm doing this because I want to serve and give back to my country. So when I read, because I want to serve, normally someone who would want to be a chaplain, they would say, I'm doing this because I want to serve God and give back to my country. But the humanist has to say, I'm just doing this because I want to serve. Oh yeah? You want to serve? Go get a job at McDonald's. That reminds me, a local radio station here in the Denver metro area, they had to fire their morning host because he choked his producer. Okay? The guy's been on the radio here for 25 years, ever since I've been here. So anyway, he has a little incident where he chokes his producer, which I've wanted to do it. I've never done it. But a lot of producers, they need a good choking. But anyway, this host, he chokes his producer, gets himself fired. And the local station now has been, they're bringing on a political talk girl who's going to handle their morning show. And on her initial promo for her show, she says, in the inevitable words of Geddy Lee, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. She says. And then all of us Rush fan geeks were all like, hey, stupid, Neil Peart writes all the lyrics, you moron. If you're going to at least quote the group accurately. So anyway, I probably won't be tuning into her show because she sounds like an empty skirt, a fairly vacuous political hack. But maybe we'll give her a try because a lot of times there's just nothing else to listen to in the morning. So anyway, we'll see. But I digress. I apologize to all my listeners around the country who couldn't care less about what's happening on local Denver radio. And obviously the only thing I'm bitter about is that I wasn't given the morning slot. It's just pure bitterness. Yeah. Actually, I wouldn't take a morning show because I'm not a morning person. I wouldn't do very well in the morning. All right, but just keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, if you're going to make references, you should at least take the time to find out who you're referring to. And don't embarrass yourself on your initial promo. All right, so only Rush fans even get that or even care. So I've lost 99% of the audience. All right, so let's get back to the news of the day. I was speaking earlier about the fact that the time has come for us, the normal people, to separate from the freaks and the weirdos. Listen to this. From WorldNet Daily, the California legislature has passed Assembly Bill 1266 that would require all public schools to allow youths to choose whatever restroom, locker room, sports teams, and other gender-based portions of the school in which they would like to participate. So you basically get to choose your gender at the door. If today you think you're a boy, use the boys' room. You think you're a girl tomorrow, go to the girls' room. This will be especially effective in junior high and high school, I'm sure. Now, there are, well, the bill has passed in the legislature, but there are some assembly people out there in California who are against it. Jack Watts, who is a Christian author and culture critic. I see, he's just a citizen of California. He's got to be freaking out. Jack Watts says this: "The real war is not on women, but on men, particularly young boys. By purposefully obscuring the lines of their male identity, we will be creating a nation of sexually confused men who will be unable to sustain a male-female relationship. The only winners will be the divorce lawyers." Unquote. This guy should have got the morning show in Denver. Someone should have figured out a way to move him out here. Oh, boy. WorldNet Daily notes that California is the only state in the union not replacing its own population. They lose about 225,000 people each year since about 1990. And it's, well, I mean, see, people vote with their feet. They're saying it's time to get out of California because the freaks have taken over out there, and it's time for the normal people to just get away. Just try to escape. All right, more from the bad religion file. We go to a reliable source of bad religion, the Archbishop Desmond Tutu. You remember Tutu, right? Archbishop Desmond Tutu from South Africa received the 1984 Nobel Peace Prize, the 1986 Albert Schweitzer Prize for Humanitarianism, and in 1999, he received the Sydney Peace Prize. My only question is, Reverend Tutu, what have you done for me lately, man? I think I was slipping into a Jamaican accent there at the end. I apologize for that, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, obviously, he hasn't received a prize since 1999, so he's desperate to get back in the news. And at a recent address to officials leading an unstrategy session to promote homosexuality in Africa, The Archbishop said, "I would refuse to go to a homophobic heaven. No, 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 no. I would say sorry. I mean, I would much rather go to the other place." Ooh. Yeah. "I would not worship a God who is homophobic. It is similar to me to apartheid. For me, it is at the same level. I would not worship him." Okay, Desmond, no problem, buddy. You're not going to have to go to a homophobic heaven. You can go to hell. See, sometimes you can say that. Hey, Reverend Tutu, go to hell. Right? It's appropriate. He just said he'd rather do it, so I'm just going to encourage him along his way. Desmond Tutu has been on his way straight to hell with jet rockets ever since he came upon the scene. And he's just confirmed it. Anyway, no doubt he'll be given some kind of award. Now he'll be up for a Nobel or a Schweitzer. Who knows? He'll be given an award now. He got his name back in the papers, on board with the homosexuals. So he'll be invited to all the right parties again. Now, let's go to Russia. And this is a shame, ladies and gentlemen, when you have to go to Russia to find some semblance of sanity. Is this the only story? I thought I had another story about Russia. Well, apparently not. Anyway, do you know that it's illegal in Russia? This is encouraging. It is illegal in Russia to speak about homosexuality around minors. I completely agree and support that policy. And it's also illegal to openly display pride in homosexual behavior. Yeah, the ban in Russia is against, quote, propaganda of non-traditional sexual relations. And I mean, I hate to say it, but you got to hand it to the Russians. At least they're right on this issue. You should not, there are a number of things you should not be able to proselytize about to kids. Deviancy and perversion among them. And the Russians have a law against it, for crying out loud. Maybe that's where we got to go. Russia.
But
it's cold.
So
it's cold in Russia.
Yeah, but they're so bad,
though. Well, and they're communists, too. Well, and gangsters.
And prostitution and abortion. And
well, Russia is, it's a cesspool. But at least in public, they've got a law against proselytizing homosexuality to kids. Now, the story here is from ABC News, which is run by a bunch of deviant perverts. And they say, the implication for openly gay individuals is clear. Public displays and symbols like the rainbow flag and pride parades are now banned. So, the big question, what will happen to openly gay athletes and fans at the Sochi Winter Olympics? What's that? Well, we'll just have to see about that. Because the Russians, they don't mess around, you know. Anyway, so ABC, naturally, they're concerned about the homosexual athletes, of which apparently there must be a lot of them. Anyway, one lawmaker in St. Petersburg, Russia, said that the fans and athletes will not be immune from prosecution if they promote homosexuality during the games. Yeah. Now, the U.S. Olympic Committee says they're doing all they can to ensure the safety of Americans at the game. Hey, you want to make sure American athletes are safe? Ban homosexuals, homosexuality, and the promotion of homosexuality amongst your athletes. That's one way to keep them safe. Bunch of backwards perverts. Now, as far as ABC can find out, there's only one openly queer athlete who's going to be at the Olympics. He's a New Zealand speed skater. And he's already pledged to wear a rainbow pin during the games. Now, that would be a pretty cool scene. See that the speed skater, he's going like 90 miles an hour, you know, and he crosses the finish line and boom, right into a big old bunch of KGB agents. Drag him, throw him into a paddy wagon, take him off to jail. That'd be pretty cool. That'd be worth tuning in for. And by the way, the only reason ABC does this story is because the Olympics are their product this year. And it's a way for them to gin up interest in a...
It's not NBC this time.
I believe it's ABC, if I'm not mistaken. It's the Winter Olympics, you know.
Oh, winter.
Yeah. Anyway, regardless, ABC, NBC, Disney, PepsiCo, they're all,
yeah,
you know, one big conglomerate, one big pile of homos. All right, now, I have a very serious article here that I want to get to before we run out of time, ladies and gentlemen. This, I find to be unbelievable. From Springfield, Vermont, this is from the Associated Press, Timothy J. Zad is a sex offender deemed so dangerous that Vermont authorities are taking the unusual step of not only warning the public that he's about to get out of jail, but cautioning the communities where he may reside that blue-eyed, blonde-haired boys of 12 or 13 could be in particular peril. So according to the AP, there's nothing to stop this 53-year-old pervert from walking out of prison as early as this Friday. Now, Saad was sentenced in 2001 for aggravated sexual assault against a 13-year-old boy. And his lawyers insist that now he has served his time. Yeah. One lawyer says, you can't hold someone who has not committed a new crime. Do we want to be a society that does that? This man has served his time, and he should be allowed out of prison. Yet the prison officials and governing officials there are so freaked out, they're telling people, basically, lock up your sons, especially if they're blonde-haired and blue-eyed.
Wow.
I know, it's unbelievable. So the AP points out that this case has focused attention on the difficulties of, the fact that we're allowing sex offenders to live. I mean, they don't say it that way, but that is the problem. The fact that someone who rapes a 13-year-old boy is allowed to live, that creates all kinds of problems, especially when you're going to release them back into the the population. It's unbelievable to me that this they would be allowed to do this. Now, the executive director of Vermont's ACLU, of course, he's piped up. He says the public needs to simply accept the fact that sex offenders get out of prison when they complete their sentences. Just lay back and enjoy it. Just accept it, says the ACLU. He says we live in a society that operates by the rule of law. So he has to be allowed out. Well, let me tell you something, Mr. ACLU pervert. What's his name? Alan Gilbert. We live in a society that operates by the rule of law, but not only your law, and not only the law that allows sex offenders to live, but we also operate under the immutable laws of the Creator God. And you cannot allow sex offenders to live and to dwell among us. You just can't do it. Mr. Zod will offend again, and he will either be killed, or he will kill someone else, or he will end up back in prison. And I think we should cut out the whole dance and just put him to death. This guy, he's not even going to be on parole. He's just he does have to register.
Oh, that's
yeah, he has to register. He could have gotten life in prison, but he was offered a plea bargain to spare the boy the horror of having to testify against him. Well, I would just have the boy talk into a videotape recorder, an audio tape recorder, 5 or 10 minutes, corroborate the evidence, find him guilty, take him out behind the courthouse, and shoot him in the back of the head. All right, that might be. Maybe we allow one appeal. But the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, who told us, who convinced us that we have to accept and allow child molesters to live? When did that happen? I can't believe that has happened. And this story, I Googled this fella's name today. I couldn't find anything on him, anything new. But no doubt he'll rear his ugly head again. All right, speaking of ugly heads, let's go to Fargo, North Dakota. A judge ruled Wednesday to block a North Dakota law that requires doctors who perform abortions to have hospital admitting privileges. Opponents of the bill said it would shut down the abortion clinic there in Fargo, which was the intent, obviously, of the people who passed the law. They want to close the Red River Women's Clinic in Fargo. It's the state's only abortion provider. And listen to this. In North Dakota, the clinic performs about 1,200 abortions a year. That is unbelievable. I mean, what is that? 3 a day? More than 2 a day in Fargo. I can't believe it. Anyway, this law was going to require abortionists to have hospital-admitting privileges. It was sponsored by a Republican. And he said, hey, obtaining these credentials is not difficult. So, you know, it's... Yeah, I don't understand these Republicans. You know, they pass this law that's supposed to restrict abortion, and then they say, hey, but it's not. It says you can just go get your privileges. Come on. Anyway, 9 states have passed similar laws requiring admitting privileges, basically cleaning up the image of abortionists everywhere, and also going a long way to help big abortion beat out the mom-and-pop shops. Yeah. And by the way, what is big abortion? Is it Planned Parenthood? I guess you could say Planned Parenthood is big abortion. But even bigger is the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. They're big abortion. And they do abortions in private clinics and in hospitals every day. They do 3 times as many as Planned Parenthood. And they don't mind if this little clinic out in Fargo goes out of business, because then big abortion, they get all that business. It's all about money and bloodlust. It's just disgusting. Only personhood can change this. And it won't change it at the political level. Yeah, you know, if we manage to pass personhood in North Dakota, do you think the left is going to roll over and say, oh, you guys win? No. Our goal is just to start the fight. We want to pick a fight with the child killers. And we want to have that conflict that hopefully will lead to the separation. I mean, eventually the freaks and weirdos and the baby killers, they'll kick us out. We'll be glad to go. From WorldNet Daily, the Church of Euthanasia actually exists. It's a small anti-natalist, anarchist collective vaguely related to art under the broad umbrella of Dadaism. Are you familiar with Dadaism? Dadaism started almost a century ago, and Dadaists reject sanity, reason, religious beliefs, as deterrence, and instead they embrace chaos, intuition, and absurdity. Those are the Dadaists. Well, now there's a church. They call themselves the Church of Euthanasia. And they got coverage here in WorldNet Daily, but it turns out it's one guy, Chris Korda, and a few of his friends. But they have achieved nonprofit status. They say their church is devoted to restoring a balance between humans and the remaining species on Earth. The four pillars of the Church of Euthanasia are suicide, abortion, sodomy, and cannibalism. I mean, couldn't they just start with suicide? That kind of makes the other pillars kind of moot. Anyways, contemporary Dadaism is hard to define. Well, because they reject sanity, reason, and religious beliefs. They're kind of amorphous, but they fall generally to the left. And they're anti-religious and anarchistic. Yes. WorldNet Daily reports that Barack Obama's original change mantra in his first presidential campaign is quintessentially Dada in spirit. It implies continuous, undefined change, no questions asked. So that people argue, is Obama a Christian? Is Obama a Muslim? No, I think he's a Dadaist. I have a feeling. He's the worst of all possible cases. He's a Dadaist. All right, I'm running out of time rapidly here, but Ariel Castro was allowed to speak at his sentencing. He's the guy who held these girls captive for a decade. Found in the home was a handwritten letter in which Castro proclaimed, "I am a sexual predator," and he said he had an addiction to pornography. He's made a plea deal to avoid the death penalty, and instead he'll get life in prison plus 1,000 years, which just proves that in order for justice to be bent and fitted to the desires of the left, it has to become ridiculous. Life plus 1,000 years. How about that? Let's see. They let him speak. People are upset that they let him speak. I'm kind of glad they let him speak. I want people to know what he's all about. He says he was sexually molested as a child. He has an addiction to pornography. And I would have been all for letting him speak his piece right before his public and painful execution, but instead he gets life plus 1,000 years. It's just a joke. When justice becomes ridiculous, it's time to think about leaving the building, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Oh, by the way, CNN had a report. There's a new study out about monogamy. Scientists are asking, where did this tendency to form long-lasting relationships with just one other person come from? Well, two studies published last week address the question, according to CNN. One says dads stick around in order to protect their kids. The other study says it's because of resource distribution and the female diet. That's what the scientists... I'm sure they're getting grants to run these studies, and they want to drag these things out as long as possible so they can get their big retirement checks as they search for the mysterious question, the answer to the question of how is it, why is it that monogamy seems to have become so ingrained in our culture. And so I guess I'll end the show right where I began it. I'll thank my pastor, Bob Enyart, and I'll thank Joshua and Caroline Craddock for in less than 15 minutes, basically laying out for God and everyone who was there the exact history of why it is that monogamy stuck. I appreciate it. So that's all I got, folks. Should the Lord delay, I will be back with you next week. And until then, I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at Denver Bible Church, at American Right to Life, and Personhood USA, and as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, please come back and join us next week. And until then, may the grace of God be with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.